Dubai Eye
103.8. Okay, time now to catch up with the team from Made Up Farms. Basically, and they won't mind me saying this, pioneers of sustainable farming here in the region. That's thanks to the efforts of their CEO, Abdelaziz Al Mulla, who's become something of an ambassador, a spokesperson for sustainable farming here in the region as well. And his head of operations, Carl Wagner, who is also with us. Abdelaziz, let's start with you. Great to have you on board again. Welcome back. This is an area you know well, isn't it?
Us, and I have to say that incredibly warm welcome. I hope we can live up to it. No, we're glad to be back at Abu Dhabi Sustainability Week, and super excited to be talking to you.
And Kyle, great to have you on board. Liking what you're seeing so far?
Loving it so far, and excited about a great week ahead of us.
Let's start with the farms, if we can. Okay, Kyle, I'm going to put you on the spot in front of your CEO. Please explain to everybody out there what Made Up Farms do.
That's a great question. So we are an indoor ag tech startup company, and we are focusing on hydroponic growing. So what does that mean? We're growing without soil, we're growing in a controlled environment, free of all the dust and debris and bad weather we have outside, giving great conditions for the plants year-round, right here locally in the UAE.
Did he pass? Is that all right?
I think that's great, actually. I think probably the main thing we also want to focus on is why we're doing this.
Yeah.
Most people think it's obvious, you know, we're in a desert, we can't grow, et cetera, et cetera. That's not the case at all. Actually, 80% of water use is for agriculture or irrigation today. And that's a really terrifying thing when you think that less than 1% of our land is agricultural land. We're overusing our water, we're not producing enough, and what we're producing isn't good enough quality. And I think when we think about the why, that just very clearly understands what we're doing, which Kyle touched on.
Can you explain, not just to me, but to others out there, because here's a phrase that I think I understand, but then I probably don't if I'm really, really honest with people. And I'm sure a number of others that are similar out there. Vertical farming. What is vertical farming?
We get that question a lot. You know, and I think it's very important to say that it's not just vertical farming. There's a number of different terms. Vertical farming is one approach that we can use in agriculture. And what that means is, think of going from a small one-story house to a multi-level skyscraper. That's kind of what we do with our farms, where we have multiple levels, and so therefore we're able to better utilize the land that we have. Now, as you go up vertically, that also means that you have to do so in a way without using soil, and that's the real value proposition here in the UAE, in the region. It's the fact that we can grow without soil. We actually use a technology called hydroponics, which means we grow in water, and that allows us to conserve over 95% of water use versus a conventional farm. And that's the real value here. It's less the land efficiency, more the water efficiency.
I'm going to ask you about food and water security in a few moments' time. As a proud Emirati, it's something that I want to get from your take. But Carl, before I do that, let's get the international perspective, because here we are in the UAE. We know that food and water security is an issue the world over. You're a man who obviously works in the industry and has globally. Why come here? Why come here to further your career as part of what is a global challenge?
That's a great question. So I've been here for about 8 years now, and I've seen a great amount of increased awareness in this space over the last few years. I think it's driven from increased consumer awareness. I mean, just look at the attendance of this exhibition this week. More and more people around the world are joining the conversation about sustainability. So as the consumers are driving that question, they're asking, where is my fruit coming from? Is it coming from a sustainably sourced place? Is it coming from somewhere locally? And we think that's why we're here, to answer that question.
And are those questions that have been asked here in the UAE since time immemorial? Is this a modern question, or is this a question that all of your previous generations have been asking?
I think it's a question not just here in the UAE. I think it's a global question. Yeah. And I think it's a question that we as human beings have to address, because food is one of our core necessities for life. And how we produce food hasn't really changed over the last hundreds of years. Okay, you can give it to the 18th and 19th century saying that we got commercialization, mass produce, but all it's really done is commoditized food. We haven't really thought about a new way of producing food. We haven't really come to grips with the new reality. And that's why the question that will always keep popping up, because we always have to keep in pace with time. Today we have to feed an ever-increasing number of people in an increasingly depleted natural environment. That's not a challenge we were really facing 100 years ago. We were really facing, how do you feed X amount of people? And that was the end of the question. And so the question's always there. It's just evolved as it passes through time.
So in terms of that, in terms of the challenges that we're facing here, with you, as you mentioned there, the growing population, not just here, but on our planet as well, is it a challenge that we can address here? What's the potential for vertical farming and similar projects here in the region?
So I'm going to talk, I think, a bit more broader, and then maybe Kyle, you can jump in. One thing we have to really recognize is not just vertical farming, but AgTech as a whole, which is the intersection of technology and agriculture, hasn't really been around for that long. It's still a very nascent industry globally. And so that also means that there are so many challenges left to address and so many opportunities left to capture. That gives us as a region and as a country an opportunity to become a global leader, not just a regional leader and not just a follower, especially when you consider some of the challenges that we're facing here are some of the most pressing environmental challenges when compared to the rest of the world. And we've seen that reflected in government policy. Last year, there was $1 billion announced in R&D incentives to create Abu Dhabi as a hub for AgTech. We've seen it in policy changes with the creation of the new advanced ag license. And we've seen it with new entrants. We ourselves have been working for the last couple of years doing a lot of R&D. And Kyle, maybe you can touch a little bit about all the different activities that we've done and how it's changed over time.
Yeah, definitely. So, looking around the world, we have looked at what other kind of ag tech companies are out there, what other kind of solutions are out there. We asked what is most suitable to this particular environment here, with particular needs around the high external temperatures we have. We've played around a lot with different systems, improved the air conditioning, therefore making sure everything inside the factory, the farm factory, is running optimum conditions year round. Here there's a unique pressure we have because everything is imported here. Over 90% of food is coming from externally, which does drive up those prices of that. Because obviously investing in this technology does cost a bit more money than more of a traditional low-cost farm. So here we have the nexus of these two factors coming together, which means this region actually will probably be the world leader in terms of innovation in this space.
And in terms of, I want to ask you both about education a little later on, because obviously I think that is fundamental to everything that you are doing, and there's a number of great initiatives that you are doing. But in terms of the sort of changing of perceptions as well, if I walk into, I'm not going to start naming supermarkets, I'll get myself into all sorts of trouble, but if I walk into a high street supermarket and I see a beautiful oval tomato gleaming at me at the moment, going, buy me, buy me, buy me. And then I see a bit of local produce alongside, which needs a bit of working up, etc. But it's probably that much more delicious when I actually taste it. Is that one of the hurdles we need to get over first and foremost?
I think the biggest hurdle we have to get is to be open to change.
Yeah.
You ask children or the younger generation today, where does food come from? And they're going to say, insert supermarket name, I won't fall into the trap just like you, but they think it comes from the supermarkets, they think it's come from the cafes or the hotels. They don't understand that we do have the opportunity not only to grow here, but grow sustainably and at a higher quality than what we're used to. I think being open to that message is the first step, and letting people understand and realize what is possible today, not in the future, not some sort of far-flung futuristic scenario, but what we're doing right now. And I think that's something that we're already seeing. Consumers are demanding more local produce. Consumers are asking, people are asking, where is food coming from? People are asking, how was this produced? What went into this production? I mean, Kyle, we do our visits on a regular basis, right? What's some of the most common questions we get from people?
One question we get all the time is your product organic, for example, right? And that's a question that wouldn't have even been asked, say, 10 to 15 years ago in most parts of the world. So that, again, reflects consumers are becoming more and more aware of where their food is coming from.
From the Abu Dhabi National Exhibition Center,
this is The Agenda.
Live at Abu Dhabi Sustainability Week, accelerating sustainable development.
On Dubai Eye 103.8.
We're talking vertical farming here in the UAE, here in the region. Asking the question, is it catching on at the moment? Do you fully understand vertical farming? Do you fully understand ag tech at the moment? Well, it is catching on, and people are understanding it more. Thanks, in no small part, to the efforts of the two gentlemen alongside me, the CEO and the head of operations of Mada Farms, Abdulaziz Al Mulla and Kyle Wagner here, talking to us about their efforts, but also the industry as a whole here in the region. And further afield. Let's talk about perceptions a little more if we can of lizards, because a big focus, it's interesting to listen to the news there just a few moments ago, Roger Federer, one of the finest tennis players in the world, coming in for a bit of stick at the moment about a couple of his sponsorship deals because of their sort of impact on the climate, and obviously him flying his family around the globe to play tennis, etc. You know, it is such a hot topic at the moment. It is affecting everybody at the moment. Do we, given the fact what climate change has done in the last year and the fact that it's become such a hot topic, is it the same when it comes to food and water security at present? Or are we still a little bit, yeah, it's never going to affect us?
You know, I think the first thing that you have to recognize is the different levels of awareness that you can really have. Right. So when you bring up the Federer incident, it's great that so many people care, and it's great that so many people have this call to action. But how many of them actually live that action themselves? Yeah. And I think that's the first thing. When you speak about climate change, I think one of the major issues that we've been aware of for the longest is really recycling. So something that's come along that we've adapted our behaviors, but that wasn't an overnight change. That was something that took, quite frankly, at this point, decades of focused intervention by public sector, public policy, by private sector. All these people sending out this message. And that's really what we need holistically across climate change. And one of the reasons I say that is because food security is not just food security. The biggest impact to water security is food production. One of the biggest impacts to climate change itself is food production. It is not a standalone issue. And so you can't really be truly aware about one without being aware of the other one. What I would say is the awareness of the possible solutions to food and water security, now that's been heating up as a space, and that's been rapidly expanding and been rapidly getting the needed awareness, if you will, from people, understanding this is a problem we're not facing, you know, 60, 70, 100 years down the line, you know, let our grandkids deal with it. No, this is something that we ourselves are going to be starting to feel the impacts of within the next 20 to 40 years in our lifetimes.
Let's talk fluidly then, if we can, because I'm assuming that food security ain't possible without water security. The two go hand in hand and have done since the beginning of time. But is it also a sort of pressure on water? Can food be a pressure on water security in terms of the amount of water that food needs and vice versa?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just take a look here in the region, right? 80% of water use is for agriculture irrigation. And this is in a desert climate. When's the last time you were driving down the road and you saw a farm here?
Yeah, no, it's been a while. Yeah, it's been a while.
Less than 1% of our land is arable or cropland. When you think about the fact of how much beef we consume as an example, right? The average kilogram of beef is 3,000?
Yeah, something, I think 15,000 liters for a kilo of beef, something like that.
Liters of water, just to get it from when it first starts to onto your plate. Because there's so much more involved. It's not just the production of food. It's the miles. We've become commoditized in the 20th century economies, if you will, right? We've typically focused on what we're best. And so what's ended up happening are centers of global production. And so you get countries or regions that are sort of leaders in a certain sector. And then they ship. But what happens with that is you're using preservatives to keep all that produce fresh. What happens with that is you're growing larger and larger amounts of food to compensate for the wastage that happens in the transport. What happens is you're actually producing quite a lot of food, but not a lot of it is reaching the end customer. And what is reaching them is toxic and in at some times. And I think that's been the major development of the 20th century, but now as we go into the 21st century, how do we marry sustainability with that food production? And that's where vertical farming's promise really starts to shine in indoor farming, because it conserves over 95% of water. You're able to grow in an indoor environment, which eliminates the need for pesticides and insecticides. And because we're able to grow, say, you know, a meter from where we're sitting right now, and we've got examples of an indoor farm at our stand down the hall, you're able to eliminate a lot of those food miles.
So question to you, let's put this one to Carl if we can, because a lot of people will be listening out there and they're you know, wondering about the scale that you guys are doing it on at the moment, the innovation, the technology that you're bringing to bear. Is there anything to stop them doing that in their own backyard, or is that counterintuitive to you, or is that part of the process?
We think that's part of the process. If we look at farming, you know, there's always a question of scale. How much do you want to grow? Do you want to grow enough for your own family in your back garden? Go ahead, you can do that with a few small selected crop varieties. You can put a system on your back patio, use the free sunlight we have available. You can grow your chili peppers, your basil, your herbs, things like that. That grows just fine here. When we start talking about feeding a family or multiple families or a bigger community, then we have to talk about scale. So we've looked at the whole different spectrum from small countertop units to container farming solutions all the way up to commercial scale. And I think each one of those serves a different part of the market.
Talk to me about, go on.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt, Tom, but I think it's important to tease out two major themes here. One, when we think about, at Madar Farms, part of our vision statement is to increase food self-sustainability.
Yeah.
And when you think about a vision or a goal as large as that, especially when we're thinking about a country level, it's really something that is beyond any one institution or one individual.
Sure.
And so, no matter the developments in the corporate industry, we still need a mass change on the people and community side if we really want the needle to move. I think that's the first most important thing to mention. And that's why, as Kai mentioned, we're looking at individual production, countertop production, and educational programs as well. I think the second thing that's very important to mention is, you know, whenever a new technology comes along, it doesn't necessarily have to be new in terms of its creation, but new in its deployment. People always hail it as a catch-all solution or as this final solution. What people have to realize is when we talk about food security and food production, there is no catch-all solution. It is going to be a comprehensive, holistic number of solutions across different areas that's actually going to impact it as a whole picture. Whether that's vertical farming, indoor farming, whether that's producing meats in labs, whether that's blockchain tracking of food, whether it's, you name it, there are so many interventions, so many different areas of need, because the food production system as a whole is so large and broken that there is so much room to create impact. And so when you talk about scale, you really have to contextualize that in the global scale, and that while we may be leading the vertical farming and indoor farming revolution here in the region, we have our eyes set on a much broader, call it, pie of AgTech accessible technologies.
From the Abu Dhabi National Exhibition Center.
This is The Agenda.
Live at Abu Dhabi Sustainability Week, accelerating sustainable development.
On Dubai I 103.8.
Talking food security, talking water security, talking vertical farming and much, much more. Growing, innovating, educating with the team from Madar Farms. We have Abdulaziz Al-Mullah, the CEO, and Carl Wagner, the head of operations. Before we get final thoughts from them, we've been out on the floor asking people about their food and their sources. What's the biggest concern for you about where your food comes from? This is what people have been saying.
So I actually buy my produce from supermarkets. It's not so much about price for me so much as it is about quality. I try to go for local organic produce when I'm shopping.
Yes, it's definitely important because I need to know where or how much or what the fertilizers or pesticides were used on the fruits or where the vegetables are coming from.
I buy them from the supermarkets because it's more convenient. I don't really think carefully before buying the produce. It depends on the quality of the product and the price.
I care where it comes from, and of course every time I am asking some questions.
A few thoughts then from the floor as people make their way down here to Abu Dhabi Sustainability Week. Abdulaziz, your thoughts there. One recurring theme, cost.
Yeah. So I think you absolutely said a recurring theme is cost, but also a recurring theme is quality.
Yeah.
And when we think about how we compete, if you will, between commas, right, against what else is out there in the market as an offering, we compete on value.
Yeah.
So it's not just a price play, it's actually also a quality play. When we think about what's being offered in the market, you've got a very wide range, everything from imported organic produce all the way to sort of local conventionally produced food. And where we sit in terms of quality, we're very proud and confident to say that our quality is unmatched because of the way that we grow. We don't use pesticides, as we heard, as it is a key consideration. We don't use preservatives because the farm is located close to distribution centers. And we're actually able to give the farm, the plants a much better environment. We give it exactly what it needs. When we think about price, it is depending on the crop group, right? Because some things we can grow efficiently. I mean, I can grow lettuce, I can grow tomatoes very efficiently, but I can't grow an avocado to save my life, you know? It's just something that we can do right now. What I would add to that is the headwinds. As time goes on, technology is getting more efficient for us. We're able to produce at more accessible price levels, and we're able to widen that accessibility. I think when we look at conventional farms, on the other hand, volatility of climate change is increasing. the price inputs are increasing, and we're going to see that happen, and it's already happening on the shelves themselves. Yeah. I think the final thing I would add is, we heard one comment about the gentleman would always ask where his produce is from. We're typically used to using location as a proxy for quality. So in this region, we'll typically look at Holland or Dutch produce as sort of the highest quality, but we don't take into consideration the fact that it has to travel all the way. Would you want to eat, you know, a steak that's been stuck in a plane and that's been traveling for, you know, X amount of days before you actually eat it? But that's what we're doing with our vegetables, and we don't really put that much thought into it. And so my response would be, it is actually a value play, and it depends on what you're looking for where you're looking for it.
I want to ask you about education in a few moments' time, but Carl, I just want to ask you about a couple of the initiatives that you and the team at Meda Farms are putting into process at the moment. Bastani and Masdar container farming. Tell me more about these.
Great. Well, it's two separate initiatives that we launched in partnership last year with Masdar. So the first of which is Bustani. That's a smart farming exhibition. Masdar built an eco villa about 2 years ago, and that was a villa meant to showcase the latest construction techniques, how the villa can be built in the most sustainable way possible. To further build upon that, we put in place some smart farming solutions. So we have some countertop growing units, we have some units outside in the back garden, water generation units, etc. The whole idea with this exhibition is to show people what's possible today. Right, we want to shift the conversation about the future, what are we doing tomorrow. No, let's take action today. Let's show people what they can go out and purchase if they want to. Along those same lines, we also have a container farm there. We have four different containers, as we're calling our R&D facility. And there we're looking at a number of different things. How do the products grow here? How do we do the distribution, the supply chain, the inbound? There's a whole many aspects about running a business here which we want to prove out at a small scale before we can move to a much larger scale later on this year.
We've seen the benefit of speaking to younger generations in so many different things, be it wearing a seatbelt in a car, be it preserving water when you're brushing your teeth, etc. Plastics at the moment as well. Is it the same with farming? How important is it to get into schools and the minds of youngsters?
It's all the much more important, because it's so much less visible than everything else that it's much more important that we try to communicate to the younger generation as much as possible. Yeah. Like, let me take a quick step back here. Education has to happen on multiple levels. Now, as Kyle alluded to, in our R&D farms, we're doing more than just growing. It's about the operating procedures. It's about the packaging. It's about making sure that everything is in compliance with public policy, if it exists. And so that education is not just an internal organizational level education, but also an external one, alongside not the public. And whether the public is a public sector or whether it is a community, we have an equal responsibility in order to make this technology accessible in terms of the knowledge to them. And so one thing we focused very heavily on is on educating in schools and universities, because this is our labor pool of the future. Yeah. These are our people who are going to vote with their purchases in the future, and they're also the greatest ambassadors of our message. I'll give you an example of that. We launched our Sustainable Futures program. Now, that is a curriculum that we designed ourselves here in the UAE. It's specific to the UAE with specific relatable examples to our children and our community. And kids can actually farm with their own hands. They've got a solution in their schools. They get to immerse themselves. And when you see their eyes light up with the sudden understanding of bridging that gap between what's normally on their plate and where it comes from, not only is it fulfilling, but it's actually a way to spread that message and spread the awareness that we touched upon earlier in the segment. And Kyle, maybe you can detail a little bit what the average lesson plan or what that curriculum starts to look like.
So the curriculum starts off with an overview of, again, how does agriculture fit into the much wider discussion around climate change and the climate crisis we have today. So we help the school students understand where their food comes from and how the food needs water and different resources as an input for that. Then we actually move them through the whole growing cycle. We actually are giving them seeds. We're giving them a small mini hydroponic farming kit right there in the classroom. And they're getting that learned with their own hands. They're planting themselves. They're giving the nutrients every week. They're checking up on the plants. And then most excitingly, at the end of the semester, they're harvesting those crops and eating them for themselves. And seeing the kids' faces when they actually are eating something they've grown themselves and taking that ownership, that's something that you can't get just from a textbook. That's a real extra experience.
Gents, we're running out of time on this occasion. I know that you've got your work cut out over the course of the week down here at the event as well. Bigger and better this year, Abdulaziz. Are you looking forward to the next few days?
Always looking forward to the next few days, especially this week, though.
Good on you. Thanks so much indeed for being with us. Carl, if people want to find out more about those initiatives, they want to come and say hi to you guys, they want to find out more about how they can work with Made Up Farms, what's the best way for them to do that?
So people are visiting here in Adnac. We're in Hall 3, stand 3230. Otherwise, you can go to our website, madarfarms.co.
Bless you, fellas. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for having us here.
Enjoy.
Take care.
This is Dubai Eye 103.8.